You call that radio?
Live from the middle of nowhere, on the edge of the universe, we're streaming live on YouTube, owned by Google, but this place is not on Google Maps. Royal Mail, all the postmen in all of the UK shrug their shoulders at this place. They don't know where it is. Not even the bin men visit. This is Caravan Radio. It's called Caravan Radio because this is Caravan Radio. But we're going to go live to London. Today's special guest is writer, comedian, poet, political analyst, Becky Fury. I've been away in the middle of nowhere. I've not seen much of the news. I'm a bit out of the loop. But I'm assuming everything's going really well in tickety-boo in the real world. And I'm assuming that you're just joining us today to tell us everything's going to be okay.
Yeah, everything is good. Everything's going to be okay. I don't know what else to say about that. I mean, if there's no point in worrying, is there? Really?
No.
And to be honest, you're probably in the best place considering what's going on.
Oh, cool. So if there's an apocalypse, I'm here.
Yeah. Yeah, nice place for the apocalypse.
I've been pretty much eating toast and vegetable curry. And I've got vegetables here. I've got access to vegetables. Mm-hmm. So I'm okay. As long as I'm all right. That's fine.
Is that the news? You're all right?
Yeah, it feels fine. Everything feels fine here. But there is a solar panel issue, so it is affecting. So apologies if it's a bit, the internet goes a wee bit wonky or there's a power cut. Wouldn't be good. But we're doing it live from a phone that's going into a laptop, so it should be okay. We should beat any power cuts. So first of all, Becky, you're doing really well with your TikTok. It's doing really well.
Why
do you think it's doing so well? Like, is it the format of the way that you speak? Do you think it's just suited to that?
Well, we're in this like lull in terms of the news at the moment, and we're going to go on to some stories that are present at the moment. But it does really well if you can get a very insightful analysis that's very funny. People like that, obviously. But if you're very accurate and you sum up things that people can't quite manage to think themselves for them, people very much like that. And I mean, I've been doing that for quite a long time, so that's why it works very well in that format, because I know how to do it and it's just quite easy to get it presented in a nice little cheeky 1.5 minute chunk.
Yeah. TikTok's not been working for me at all. But I've never really given it a shot. I've never really went for it. But it's good to see, because lots of people that I know well are doing great on it. So shout outs to TikTok. Why TikTok though? Why are they up for it compared to say Facebook or Instagram? Because I'm assuming that you do the same stuff in different platforms. But it seems, well, just from the outside, it looks like TikTok's giving you more views, or.
TikTok has got a good algorithm for getting out to people that are outside of your immediate circle. I mean, I was doing quite well doing viral stuff on Facebook a little while ago, but I just felt that there wasn't really any point in doing it. So I've got that as a starting point, that I was actually able to sort of to hone the craft of doing it in front of like home crowds. So it was a lot of people that, I mean, probably as across every people that you know, those sort of people who are really into that type of political material and then sharing that stuff out. But TikTok, you're just going straight live out into just the ether, and just people who are interested in just picking up on the stuff, which is actually in some respects more interesting. But you need to be able to angle the material properly in order to get that to work.
And is it maybe something to do with that maybe China censorship is obviously, I'm sure if you were criticizing the Chinese government, it would be probably wouldn't do as well. But you think compared to like Facebook and Twitter and all these other platforms, they don't really want to show that as to as many people, or am I being paranoid?
You might. No, I don't think you are, and it's not something that I've thought of. Yeah, I mean, the fact that if you're doing stuff which is political criticism and commentary, it might be stuff that TikTok specifically wants to share in its algorithm because it is in the, it fits the agenda of TikTok.
But like,
it's more to do with the fact that people think that I'm fucking hilarious.
No, you are hilarious. You're brilliant at what you do.
Yeah.
You should get it. I'm trying to say that the other places should be doing it as well. It's like if you went on Twitter right now and you are a pro-gun guy, I think it would be a good time to be a pro-gun guy on Twitter. I'm predicting that Trump is going to ban guns in Democrat states to try it out. And I think all the Trump fans will like that. And I think that'll work. So you heard it here first. I just thought of that today. So that was an original thought. I'm not going to Google it in case someone else has came up with it already. It's hard to have an original thought. But let's try and have some original thoughts today. Like I said, I'm out the loop. I don't know. I've got a couple of things that I was wanting to ask you about. Can we start with digital ID cards? Now, I hear that the extremely popular, our Prime Minister, our greatest ever Prime Minister, everyone on the left loves him, everyone on the right loves him, Keir Starmer. He's saying he thinks he's going to give billions of pounds to Tony Blair's son to oversee a great digital ID. And I'm assuming you're fine with that and you're happy with that.
You know, I didn't know that about the fact that it's Tony Blair's son who's overseeing
Ewan Blair.
Project. Right, I didn't know that. I mean,
and I think if you go back in time, Becky, when we first met, it must have been around about the time that Tony Blair had spent £4 billion trying to get ID cards through the last time, and it never happened. And it cost £4 billion to not happen. And now his son's in charge of it actually happening. And this is at 2025 prices, not at 2010 prices or 2009 prices, whatever that was.
It's interesting, isn't it? But at that point in history, we didn't have the level of digitalization that we have now. And so it's a totally different situation because now everyone's ID, everyone's information is kind of public, is in the sort of public arena, and it's already being sold off by various different agencies. So it's a different time. Whereas when they tried to introduce the ID cards the first time around, it was before that had really become a thing. So in some respects, I don't agree with this kind of Orwellian shift towards authoritarianism. But at the same time, I can kind of see that there's a dark logic to it because they've got nothing left to sell off. So, you know, Kastama was saying, he was talking, because this has all been sort of cited in terms of the issues with Farage and the far right. He basically cited this digital ID card thing as being we're in a fight for the soul of the nation. And that's, he somehow combined the digital ID thing with that idea. And I thought, well, you're in a fight for the soul of the nation, because basically you're trying to, it's a fight for who can sell the soul of the nation off at the highest price to the highest bidder. And that's basically what's going on with digital ID. But the thing is, the soul of the nation, if such a thing exists, it's already being sold off. It's like Corbyn wanted to create a nationalized Facebook in order to basically make money to put back into the country. And so it sort of is along those same lines.
I've not heard this before. Can you remember what the national Facebook?
No, it wasn't necessary. He wasn't going to reclaim Facebook from whoever it is, that I can't remember his name, who owns
Zuckerberg,
it.
Zuckerberg, Meta.
He wasn't going to basically do like a sort of workers' reclamation of Facebook and take it all off.
Social media for the many.
Yeah, exactly.
Food selfies for the many.
Well, it makes sense, because then you can take all the advertising revenue that's been generated by Facebook and put it back into the national coffers, which actually makes quite a lot of sense to do that. Obviously, there are other issues around that, but on some level, it makes sense. I mean, you might.
It sounds like it was kind of people that are in a boardroom that are maybe sort of a bit old, older, I hadn't really thought it through. It was like an idea that got flung around. I remember you saying something that was that stuck about Corbyn before, and you were saying how that the working class thought he was too posh, but yet yeah. they loved Boris, even though he's more posh. Do you remember what I'm talking about? Why is it that the working class thought Corbyn's, you know, he's a what is it they call it, the metropolitan elite, the left, the posh man, millionaire posh man. But then you've got Boris Johnson, who's exceptionally more posh, but he's great. Why is that?
Well, he just comes across more as a man of the people. And he gives that presentation. He gives that sort of idea that he's the sort of guy that you'd want to go down the pub and have a drink with. And also it's that politics of aspiration as well. You know, people that are working class, a lot of the time, they just see themselves as temporarily embarrassed millionaires. And this idea that Boris wants to be their friend, that actually reinforces that and it makes them feel nice. And that's the most important thing, which is what left-wing politics often forgets, is it's very important to just make people feel nice, which is exactly what Nigel Farage is doing. It's what Boris did with Brexit, all of that stuff. It was just about making people feel good about themselves and feeling proud about who they are again, even though that's based on absolutely nothing. Whereas Corbyn doesn't do that. That's left-wing politicians. They don't do that stuff. And that's why there's always a problem with left-wing politicians actually being able to connect, unfortunately. But also they're kind of middle class. And there's always a problem with the middle classes. The upper classes, like Boris, they have no morals, so they don't care. Whereas the middle classes, they have morals and they kind of get stuck in this awkward position of, you know, of not liking patriotism, for example. They find it, they're quite snobby. English liberals really don't like patriotism. And Corbyn kind of falls into that bracket. And so that really alienates him from like the working class because they like patriotism. And it's a snobbery because the middle class look down on it and think it's just some sort of affectation of the working class, which is to do with them being stupid. To some extent it is, but also it's also about love as well. It's about loving your country, which is a totally acceptable thing. In Scotland, for example, it's totally different from England. People are much more comfortable loving their country, and it's much more across all the social spectrum. Everyone loves Scotland.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think it is a different thing, I suppose. But recently, for the first time ever, the Scottish flag's been hijacked by the right wing, because obviously I was just playing a gig in Lincolnshire recently, and we drove by, and I played a few gigs in England this summer, and just driving by the England flags, it's weird. And then but a couple of places in Scotland have started doing it, and it's been quite an interesting dynamic, because the majority that I know that are pro-independence are sort of on the left. And they just want rid of Westminster, they want rid of right-wing politics. But now it's weird seeing that the Scottish flag being used as a kind of anti-immigration thing. It's quite confusing to see this.
Yeah, but there's always that aspect to nationalism. I remember hearing a football chant when the Scottish were playing the Italians and the Scottish fans were chanting, "We're going to deep fry your pizzas."
Yeah.
Which had a really great sense of self-deprecation. It was very funny, but also it's aggressive. And it's basically saying, we're going to take your food and we're going to fuck it up. Or we're going to make it better from our perspective. But it's territorial. It's still got that kind of territorial national vibe to it. And it's very easy for it to slip into that. And people like that. People are angry. People are upset. Everyone's stressed. Cheese is expensive. Everything, bags of shopping are expensive. People want somebody to blame and to put their hate onto.
And yeah, well, the deep fried pizza, I mean, it's a Scottish stereotype, but I pretty much ate a half pizza in butter with curry sauce and a roll almost every day of secondary school.
Right, yeah.
So it's a real
thing. Yeah.
And we're proud of it. But the thing is, like, I can agree with, who was it?
I wasn't saying you shouldn't be proud of it.
I'm proud. No, I think that I'm not really the most of my independence thoughts were, I mean, I think you've got, like, for example, a Scottish guy winning at darts or snooker. We don't really win at football, so that's not really, that's a bit of a moot point. But I can see, you know, like a Scottish band doing well. That's, you know, things like that. But I mean, I don't really feel any proud. I don't feel proud about by a coincidence that I was born. I mean, I didn't do anything. And a lot of the things that we get proud about, apparently we invented everything. We invented the TV, penicillin. Some of these seem to be true and some of them are debated. But recently I seen a meme yesterday that apparently the first sex was invented in Scotland with prehistoric fish. So we think that we invented everything. And yeah. I'm not really proud of that. How can you actually be proud of that? Because I didn't do that. I didn't invent penicillin. It feels like a kind of distant concept to me. I was very pro-independence. I'm still pro-independence just because England keeps voting. They're going to elect Farage as next prime minister unless a miracle happens.
Yeah.
And Starmer's a Tory. It's just Tories. I just don't really like that. So that's the main reason for independence.
Yeah, but there's also a sense of national pride for a lot of people. And it doesn't tend to be something that... You're not the sort of person, I would imagine, that has a particular thing about national pride. You're not, or, you know, has that sort of need to feel proud of stuff that you didn't achieve because you've achieved quite a lot. And so you don't have that need to basically just take other people's achievements and feel proud of them. And that's what the people that have a real necessity towards national pride, that's why. Because they haven't really done anything to actually be proud of a lot of the time. Unfortunately.
And what's Britain done? You know, what's that? With the when I see the Union flag, not the Union Jack, by the way, Union Jack's on a boat. I know that because I had it in a lyric and I got corrected on it. So it's a Union flag. What do you, because obviously for me, coming from sort of a left wing back Celtic fan, I just never really liked, I never got into the Queen in that. You know, I didn't look at the Queen and go, that looks good. I always just thought, why has she got all this free money and there's people starving?
Yeah, let's not worry. Anything,
for someone who's you're always based in London, is that right? Do you have any pride? Do you have the St. George's Cross or the Union Flag? Is there any positive feelings?
No, I mean, the thing is, what I do actually think that actually gets forgotten, and they started to talk about it, they started touching on it, and this comes down, this is basically underlying the issues that are taking place at the moment. Britain actually can be very proud of the fact that it's very multicultural. And if you like multiculturalism and you like inclusion, then you, in some respects, you have to like colonialism because that's where it's come from. And there's a lot of bad things about colonialism, obviously. But also, if we can understand, I'm a product of colonialism. My mum is from India. I'm from a mixed race culture that has come specifically from colonialism. So if nothing else good has come from colonialism, I'm a good thing that's come from colonialism. And that's one of the things I started to think about, because I can't be hating on colonial history because I only exist because of colonial history. The skin colour, I'm actually, my genetics are 30% Southern Irish. So I'm Indian and English, but on both sides, Irish has managed to get in. So it's like, it's the super British colonial mix that's created me. And I think we get really caught up in all these like imperialist narratives. And it's like, we forget that these things are actually narratives of migration. You know, the people that created me, they in the main loved each other, and it's about love and it's about connection and it's about people sharing cultures. All the amazing music that's been created, especially in this country, in America, that is due to narratives of migration, people going out of the country and people coming into the country and bringing their cultural influences backwards and forwards. And it's like, that is something that should be celebrated. When people forget how awesome Britain is in terms of the level of tolerance. Like, all it gets drowned out by all these idiots with the flags, like, that's basically becoming symbols of hate. But actually, if you get underneath it, it's an incredibly tolerant, inclusive society. And that's something that we should actually, as people that are adding to that, that's actually something that we are creating. We should be proud of that.
And that's a really, really interesting point.
Mm-hmm.
I would be like, so like, if you, like the, for example, the Freedom of Speech March, if you went on stage and you said, you know, this flag makes me proud, it makes me proud of colonialism because it brought immigration, and everyone's like, yeah, what?
Yeah, I mean, you might want to rephrase it a little. But, you know,
what did you make of the Freedom of Speech March? Was it a freedom of speech, or was it a wee bit racist?
It was totally racist. And that's the thing about freedom of speech, is that it's never used, this freedom of speech thing. I'm totally for actual freedom of speech. Well, actually, no, I'm not. I'm for freedom of thought. That's very important, being able to think freely. Freedom of speech is sort of irrelevant when you're just parroting things that other people have said. And it's also never very nice. It's always freedom to say something horrible. It's never freedom to say, like, why don't you go around and make your lady next door a cup of tea? It's never that. It's let's go around to next door and burn their house down because it's full of immigrants. It's always, it's freedom of speech to say things like that. Like, so it kind of is totally devalued because it's not about freedom of speech. It's basically people wanting to say racist things. That's what it actually means.
And that's what it seems like happened with Joe Rogan and what's he called? Andrew Schultz and Tim Dillon and all these guys. They basically got Trump on their show, some of them. I think all of them actually got Trump, Theo Vaughn as well, got Trump on their show. And they kind of rallied behind Trump because it kind of came down to just saying the R word. They didn't want to say that. They wanted to say the R word in peace. And they got that, and now you've actually got, like, it seems like freedom of speech is in trouble in America now because you're not allowed to criticize the great dictator.
Well, yeah. I mean, what just happened with all the late night TV stuff.
Yeah.
And it, because it's never been about freedom of speech. And when I heard the thing about we want free speech, it's all about free speech, I just thought, this is basically Nazis that have spotted a loophole because they don't want the no platforming policy, which has been in place since World War II to stop fascism. And since all this free speech stuff has started up, basically, all of that mind virus that is fascism, that's the alt-right, it's all of this neo-Nazi, far-right nonsense that the free speech is allowing, is enabling. It basically gets out everywhere, and it's like a virus. It's so simple. It's because it's so simplistic, and it makes people feel nice. They want to take it on. And it, you know, it works. It's mimetic. So people, when they're in a social group with you, if you're of that particular ilk, everyone will take it on, and it just spreads. And that's how Nazism spread around Nazi Germany. And that's why they put the no platforming in position, because they knew that's how it spread around. And the reason that Nazism wasn't so popular after World War II is because it wasn't English-speaking people. It was Germans, and it's German language. So that stopped it spreading. But this is in English, unfortunately. So it's a very dangerous time.
Yeah, why is it that we talk about immigration so much? Like, I think it started, right? Correct me if I'm wrong, people, but also I know there's some comments. I'll read them out in a minute. Feel free to leave a comment. We'll get to them in a minute. But we always talk about immigration. I remember it, Gav, started around about the time of Ed Miliband eating a Greg sausage roll, strangely, which I think it's quite hard to eat a Greg sausage roll correctly. I don't know, but that was the old days where scandals could, that was a good old-fashioned scandal, that one. And, you know, he was destroyed, his political career was destroyed by that one.
Bacon sandwich, wasn't it? He didn't
bacon sandwich, from Greg's, though, I believe.
I
think we're both right. But
improving the image, it was the bacon sandwich, because people will remember that.
That's when I remember being very aware that every time he was on Newsnight, Nigel Farage was always on the news for some reason, even though he was never been an MP. But they would always say, we need to start talking about immigration. And it was like, everyone was talking about how we should be talking about immigration. But we literally were. Everyone was talking about it. So they kind of moved from... But before that, it was the Jeremy Kyle era, where it was kind of... They used to pick on single moms, the unemployed. For some reason, they've kind of switched the skin colour and accents. Why do you think that was?
It's fascism.
Yeah.
That's why. And it's specifically, it's Muslims that are getting targeted, and it's people with brown skin, because they say, oh, it's not racism. Look, these people are here. Like, and but actually it's specifically, you know, we've got a black person, we've got a brown person, like the UKIP. I remember them doing when they were showing the councillors that they had, and they put all the black and the brown UKIP councillors to the front of the photo shoot, and they were saying, look, we're not racist. They said, no, all you're showing there is that black and brown people can be cunts too. Like, that's all that this is proving. This isn't proving that you're not racist. They can be racist as well. But who are they being racist against? It's about these immigrants, these other people. And that's how racism works. It's about othering, and it's a type of bullying. You don't even take the word racism out of it. It's about people that you don't know, and it's specifically creating a group which creates the cohesion between your group and creates this other group as other, and you project all the bad things onto that group. And that's how fascism functions. I mean, it's how tribalism functions. It's a very basic function of human psychology to do that. You know, we all know that from primary school, that's how, you know, the people function. And it basically, it's working with that type of psychology.
And it's got Donald Trump elected twice. It got us successive Tory after Tory after Tory. And even Starmer only got elected, but because he started giving speeches with a union flag behind them, that was weird. And yeah, it seems to work. What I find really, I mean, I don't know why I'm surprised, but I still find it surprising that Brexit was such a shambles. And Farage told everyone, vote Brexit, it'll stop immigration. And from, I've not totally fact-checked, but it seems like immigration's went up.
Okay.
Is that correct?
It is, okay. But it's actually gone down in mainland Europe. So I used my one free economist article that I get a month to check about this. And it's basically, in Europe, what's happened is that they've actually, they've done like all this sort of border work. And they've given money to the countries that are bordering Europe. So they're actually stopping the immigrants coming into Europe. So actually, across Europe, Trump was saying, all your countries are in a mess. There's massive immigration. There's been a huge amount of work to actually decrease the amount of immigration that's taking place. And it has gone down, I think, 50% the year before last and 21% last year. So it's been a massive decrease. But what's happened in the UK is it's changed the quality of the immigration. So instead of getting good quality working migrants from Europe that are just coming over to work in the UK, we've got a massive deficit in London of hospitality workers because of this. Because of Brexit and the way that it changed the way that the borders work, and the way that there were treaties to basically return illegal immigrants back to France. Those treaties are no longer in place. So these people smugglers have seen that gap in the market, and that's why we're getting multiple boats that are coming over. And so it's actually changed the quality and the type of immigrants that are coming to this country. And then those people, they're not ready to work. And so it is causing problems. It's causing problems for the people that are living around them, because it's loads of unemployed migrants in one place. And it's causing problems for the migrants, because they are stuck in these places with all these people who are angry with them, and they can't work and they can't get on with their lives. And it's a complete mess. And it's totally Nigel Farage's fault. And he's capitalising on it.
That's annoying. And he's got to be the Prime Minister because it...
Yeah.
And what is his...
Well,
I try not to watch him because he does annoy me. What does he say when people say Brexit was a disaster? Does anyone... I mean, he doesn't really get... Every time I see him on television, and he's always on the television, you know... Over the summer, I think it was Dan McGarvey shared a thing saying that pretty much, I think, 15, top of the news, like 10 o'clock news, it was Nigel Farage commenting on things. And he's only got four MPs, I think, something like that, reform the new, although they're really high in the polls. Mm. So it's like, but I mean, well, you know, the Your Party, which we can maybe get into in a second, they're still picking a name, having sort of behind the scenes arguments.
Doing the sort of normal things that leftists do, where they all start bickering,
falling out. You thought they would have got to launch first. I mean, I played a gig with Jeremy Corbyn last month, and it was just that brief little moment. It was cautious hope. It was cautious hope. I was like, you know, this might be okay. This might work out for a wee bit. But yeah, not even launched. And one's the sexist old boys club and the other's a thief. I mean, I think that's what I read into it.
Yeah, or a brat, basically. Just a bratty Asian Stalin who just wants everything her own way. And there's just a discrepancy between the two things. I mean, but also it's five people that are trying to set up a political party. That sort of thing's going to happen. But we're just getting to see it, I think. I think that's part of the problem. But also because it's a very left-wing party. If you've ever done any left-wing political stuff, left-wing politics is always like this. There's so much infighting because it's meant to be anti-authoritarian. So you don't have this kind of strong cult of the leader. Which is why Nigel Farage is doing so well, because he's a strong, I mean, he's not even a particularly strong leader. That's how pathetic and broken the politics are, that people see Nigel Farage as a strong leader. And he's not, he's pathetic. He's a horrible, pathetic human being. So I don't even know if I should say that. It's very difficult to pick on him because he's very good at hiding. Like, I was trying to pick on him. I was trying to find a way of slagging him off. And he's very good at the sort of subterfuge and just creating this kind of illusion that he's just this affable geezer that gets on with everyone. And that's not it. That's not the case at all.
He's slimy. Very, very slimy, snaky.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because there is definitely bot farms out there supporting them. Like, I don't know if you've seen my TikTok, but I had obviously I've only got 200 followers on TikTok. I've never really, it's an unsuccessful TikTok, but I just put one little comment of Jeremy Corbyn saying that the Gyro Babies is kind of like a modern day UB40. That's all he said. It's a 5 second clip.
Yeah.
And I'm still every day waking up to 10 new comments, absolutely hating on Corbyn and talking about vote reform. And it's their argument is that, you know, Corbyn's a millionaire, but I mean he's a politician for all sorts of, he's rich, but then if you say back, I mean I don't comment back on these, but I see other people, shout outs to Serena, who's been battling in my comments for me, shout outs Serena, but yeah, they just say, but yeah, but Farage doesn't hide the fact that he's a millionaire and he gets billionaire money from, you know, the elites, the right wing elites, the tech people. Like I said, the tech bros. This is may or may not be true. Is this a theory that I've heard? It's Musk is pretending that he's fell out with Farage, and he's kind of like putting his support with Tommy Robinson. And I think what that's for is so that nearer the election time, he's going to say, do you know what, Tommy is too extreme. Let's go for Farage. And then does that make sense?
I mean, that could be true. I haven't paid too much attention to what's been going on Twitter and the various allegiances that are being formed there, because it's quite unpleasant.
And it's an unpleasant place.
Yes, it's not very nice. I mean, the thing is, again, because he's right wing, he can be rich. He can be supported by rich people. It's not a problem. It's not in conflict with anything. But as soon as you get into left-wing politics, all of these things become problematic, which is why the left always struggles to actually, like, gain ground. And also because...
What if Jeremy Corbyn lived in a caravan? If he was to live something like that, would that work?
Yeah, but then people wouldn't like that, because then they would think that was trashy and that wouldn't appeal to, like, the working class, because the working class are aspirational. They wouldn't, like, they don't like the fact that he wears a tatty old suit. That was like massively off-putting. And the fact that he doesn't shave every day was problematic for like large swathes of working class voters, apparently. Ethics Man hated that.
But yeah. Boris Johnson didn't wear a suit. He didn't wear a... He just looked like he'd been at the casino all night.
Yeah, but that's right. He looked like he'd been at the casino all night. Yeah. He looks like one of us. Yeah. He looks like he's been on the sniff all night.
Oh, Boris. That's what they say. Oh, Boris. What could they do? Is there anything they could do? I mean, obviously, I would say about 70% of the anti-Corbyn comments were generated by bots. The reason I know that is because they obviously didn't listen to the clip, because he literally said, they were saying things like, oh, Jeremy with the same old. And it's like, he's never said that sentence in his life before. He doesn't know who the gyro babies are. He's never had that thought. This is like an updated version of UB40. So it was like, you know, that was either it's a click farm or maybe somebody shared it on a, I don't know, like a Reddit group or a WhatsApp group and said, Jeremy's on a TikTok.
The thing is that there are bots, but also what I noticed from my comment section, and also the way that this type of politics, this very lazy populist politics works, is that the people that pick it up are not that smart. And so they just copy. And so they just act like bots. They just all will repeat the same phrase without even really understanding what it means. And that's what I got from the, you know, from the comment section. Someone would put something and then everyone else would see it. And then they'd all start putting it as well. Like, you know, it's difficult to have original thoughts.
How do you get a lot of trolls?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I got so many trolls that on the day of the big Unite the Kingdom march that was in London, I didn't want to leave my house because I was concerned, because I'd been trolled by so many people that were supporting that march, that I didn't feel safe. And I'm very brave, and I have like hitchhiked my way across Europe, and I didn't feel safe leaving my house that day. And that was because of the way that I saw a lot of those trolls responding on my posts.
That's terrible.
I know, yeah. And because it's about racism and it's about hate. And it's about attacking people that aren't you. And it doesn't matter. I mean, that's how fascism, Nazism works. All those people will end up in camps that just aren't identifying with the group. It will start off with one set of people. It will start off with those immigrants, and then who are we going to move to next? And it will keep going, because in order to maintain the integrity of the group, we need to have an enemy. And so that enemy will change, and it will continue. It will continue changing until basically there is no one left. There is just the leader, and everyone else has been eliminated.
And I seen last night that Hassan, and there was a whole bunch of left Twitch streamers that have all pulled out of TwitchCon because of the same reasons that they just don't feel safe.
They don't feel safe. That's, yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. That man, he was being interviewed by all these different reporters, and they were saying to Farage, would you let these Nazi people, would you let these people from the BNP like run as candidates in your party? He said, oh no, if they had those credentials, we wouldn't let them in. Our party is standing fast. We're stopping those people from getting into power. And it's like, no, you are those people. You're just such an evil, nasty liar. You're a horrible snake of a man. Because the thing is, what happens is that people don't ask the right questions. He was on GB News a couple of weeks ago talking to Lucy Connolly, and I don't know if you remember who she was. She is the racist babysitter that has recently done time because she was inciting people to go and burn down asylum seekers' hostels. And that woman is running as a reform candidate, and you're trying to tell everyone that you're not a racist party.
Wait, that's wild.
Dark. It's really, really dark. Yeah, I mean, I've got some notes on some stuff which is more kind of light.
Jeremy Kyle's going to run as well, apparently.
Yeah, and he's an evil fucker.
I didn't think he was going to get... I mean, I thought he would... I mean, I don't know if you've seen the Jeremy Kyle documentary. I always knew what he was doing was horrific. But the documentary was unbelievable how bad he was as a human. But it kind of fits in well in the, is it, I don't know if it's talk radio, is it talk TV? GB News, one of the things. And that makes sense. But I thought that would be his level for the rest of his days, but he's apparently considering. And I think it's one of those ones where they put it out there to see how people react. And people are reacting well. Jeremy will tell it how it is. Oh, no. Oh, dearie, dear, dear. Saudi Arabia Festival's got all the comedians. Would you... So, I'm not really surprised because most of them are all the people that they voted Trump for freedom of speech, and now they're going to Saudi Arabia, which is obviously famous for its freedom of speech.
Yeah.
So, what do you think of that? Would you play? Would you do one of your comedy sets in Saudi Arabia?
Would I do one of my comedy sets in Saudi Arabia? Well, no, I wouldn't, because I mean, partly I think that comedy, it's important to be edgy. And so any comedy set that I did in Saudi Arabia would end up with me getting bone-sawed. And the thing is, if you are a comedian, then really that's your job. If you're going to Saudi Arabia and you're not doing a set that might end up with you getting bone-sawed up, then are you really a comedian at all? Or are you just sort of providing some kind of light entertainment washing for the Saudi regime? But yeah, would I go to Saudi Arabia? No, I just think it's not something that's in the kind of within my career trajectory, I think, to go do a set in Saudi Arabia. And also I have friends of mine who have refused to work in Saudi Arabia, like people that have refused to do art installations, musicians who have refused to perform in Saudi Arabia because of the terrible human rights aspect. And I don't think, especially as a political comedian, I'm not at the level where I'm going to be invited to go to Saudi Arabia, but at the same time, as a political comedian, I don't think it would be look very good on my CV that I performed in Saudi Arabia.
Or Dubai or Israel. I mean, actually, one of my friends' band got offered a gig in Israel a few years ago.
Yeah.
And they were offered a lot of money. They said no.
Yeah, I mean, I know people that have refused a lot of money to do stuff in Saudi Arabia. And my friend, who's an artist, who does a lot of LGBTQ stuff, they were invited to go to Saudi Arabia. They were offered a huge amount of money. And they said, can I bring my rainbow flag piece? And they said, do you think you could repaint it in some different colours? And he said, no, like, that's not the point. Like, if I can't bring my rainbow flag piece, which is like the central piece of work from my oeuvre, like, I can't go there because I'm going to alienate my entire audience back home. And it's going to be against, because I'd be completely going against my principles for money.
And apparently Israel are offering £7,000 for influencers to share something pro-Israeli. And Netanyahu's been appearing in podcasts because it worked for Trump. It's wild.
Well, I mean, clearly we know that Israel does some, like, dark stuff, but they have all sorts of stuff online. Like, there's an IDF waifu. Do you know what a waifu is?
No. I thought you were going to say Wi-Fi, but no.
It's a thing from anime, which is basically an online wife. And so it's someone that you'd like to wife up. That exists online, and they have this really cute, tiny blonde girl holding a massive gun, basically with her head on like some dead Palestinian child, you know, her foot on a dead Palestinian child's head, and she's just there looking really cute, and that's meant to basically be propaganda for Israel, because she's like, you know, oh, she's so cute, look at her, she couldn't do anything wrong, and clearly she's doing something horrible, but that's just how English. I don't want to talk too much about Israel, but that is how Israel functions.
Stuart Lee said Peter Mandelson lost his job for being friends with a paedophile. Donald Trump, who was friends with the same paedophile, was given a state banquet hosted by a king whose brother lost his job because he was friends with the same paedophile. Because obviously, if anyone doesn't know, Donald Trump came into London last week to, well, I don't know, was it London? Aye, one of the palaces.
Mm-hmm.
What did they do with Prince Andrew? Did they just throw him in the dungeon for the week? Mm-hmm. Or for a couple of days?
Apparently he was at the Pizza Express in Woking.
He would never forget a pizza express and woke up that particular day. It should definitely go in. It should go. That interview was great. That was a great interview. He sorted that shit out, didn't he? Never sweated. I've never sweated.
I mean, it just goes.
Strange, why?
Well, yeah, it just goes to show how used to lying to lackeys he is, who will just swallow anything that he says and just agree.
Yes, nobody questions the prince. They're just like, right, I'm here to get paid. Whatever, mate. You don't sweat, whatever.
Yeah.
You think one of his advisors would be like, you can't say that on the BBC, man. You don't. You had PTSD from, you know, and I said, he's like, this is gold.
Really don't question Andrew. Like, you don't tell him that. If Andrew wants to do something, you just agree with him and Andrew does that thing. And that's what happened. Andrew is always used to doing whatever he wanted. And then you get to that situation where, you know, you end up on the BBC being interviewed, where you think you're going to do an absolutely amazing interview and you basically do the worst interview you could possibly do and basically just show yourself up for being a massive paedophile. And that's how that sort of, that having that level of privilege and never being held to account when you were younger, that's how it will manifest eventually when you get caught out in a really big, massive way.
And what do you think, how's Trump got away with it all? How's he managed to, because obviously Prince Andrew, I mean, it's not like Prince Andrew's, he didn't do anything anyway. So, you know, there's people that are saying, well, he had to face the consequences. He's been stripped of his royal privileges. What is that, cutting a ribbon? That sounds boring. He's still rich. He's still doing fine. But technically they said that he's been stripped of his, I mean, he would have loved that state banquet. So why is Mandelson gone? Why did Andrew get destroyed for it? Why does Trump somehow just get to walk away? Because it doesn't feel like his supporters believe him anymore.
I don't know. I think that's the thing. I think that because of the nature of fascism and because people are also so invested in the lie that they're unwilling to let go. Because obviously if Trump is outed as a paedophile, which he is.
I think we can safely say that he's outed himself.
Yeah, but he has. But he's trying to now play it down. He's trying to say that now the whole Epstein thing is.
It was a double agent. Did you hear that one? They've tried a few different things.
Yeah, exactly.
But the one about a week ago was that one of the Republicans stood up and said that. Yes, he was in the files because he was a double agent working for the FBI the whole time to catch it, to catch the bad guys.
Yeah, so basically, if you put, it's that thing of the bigger the lie, the easier it is for people to believe it. So if he's standing there and he's telling you that it's to do with, again, this other, it's to do with the Democrats, it's to do with this. It basically is reinforcing this belief system that you have. And also, if they lose Trump, what do they have? It's like, this is the thing about conspiracy theories, is that they make the world safe for people. They make sense of a very, very complicated, difficult world. And it gives people hope. And that's, if you lose Trump, then, you know, what are you losing with that? It's the same as all these Americans that are into evangelical Christian organizations. And then it will turn out that the pastor has been seeing prostitutes and has had like multiple children with all these women. And there's a massive scandal. And then they'll come back, you know, after sort of saying sorry about 2 or 3 years later, and they'll be welcomed back because people don't want to let go of hope. And if they're that invested, it's the same as like the GameStop thing. You know about that?
Yeah, I do know a little bit about it, but refresh it.
GameStop basically, it started off, people were doing an investment on into GameStop shares, and it massively skyrocketed. Somebody put a bet on it and said, actually, I think it's going to go up rather than down. And it went up, and some people made money. But then when it went down and other people had put a lot of money into it and they lost their money, instead of at that point, what you have to do if you're investing is you need to pull out. They didn't want to lose the...
To the moon. To the moon. I was in the Reddit threads, and I seen it all happen unfold in real time, and I learned about all this to the moon part.
Yeah.
And was it something fist? Strong fist, hold to the hold, you know, that kind of.
Yeah,
don't sell us out. You know, people would put, you know, people just boasting. I've just took, you know, all my life savings and put it all in.
Yeah.
To the moon. I'm not letting go. And they all lost a lot.
There are still people putting money into GameStop, and it's still going as a cult, because the people within the cult, they don't want to hear. People are losing their relationships over it because their families and like partners are saying, this is just madness. Like, you need to end this, but they don't want to let go of the dream. And that's, you know, that's the same thing that's going on with Trump, that people have invested into this belief. And if that dream dies, what do they have? So they'd rather keep believing, and they'd rather keep being fed with. And to be honest, I think at some level, people know they're being lied to, because the whole of the Trump campaign is based on lies. So what difference do a few more make?
And Trump had his own crypto coin. Lots of people invested in that.
Oh, that was evil as well. Yeah, I mean, basically he did, like, wasn't a pump and dump, it was a Trump and dump, which was the same thing that you always have with meme coins. You basically get people to invest their money, and then you basically pump it to a certain point, and then the people that have created the coin, they take their money out when it's up here, and then it drops really quickly, and all the people that have caused that pump by investing because they thought that you had their best interests at heart, they lose all their money. And those people, they're still supporting Trump.
Yeah, for example, after they did the pumping Trump with the Trump coin, they then released the Melania first lady coin. And they did the exact same thing again.
Yeah, and
no repercussions. And it's like, you kind of expect that from, you know, the Hawk Tour girl and, you know, the Final Boss, you know. These guys have just got out 15 minutes of fame. They've never pretended to have any morals. The people just somehow have invested in them. But this is the president doing this.
Yeah. But clearly, it's the whole thing is a lie.
Invest in GameStop, though. Actually, I think it's quite sweet, that one. I hope GameStop do come back and recover, because there is something about that. They're harmless. That was a harmless thing. I'm going to read some comments.
Not harmless. The people that are putting all their money into it.
The way it happened was, it started off as a genuine thing. I was watching it happen.
So
it's like, it started as a genuine thing. It was actually quite a sweet story. It's like, they're going to go to business, so let's just invest in. Because it's almost like, for people that don't know what GameStop is, it's kind of like our Blockbuster or Global Video. It's kind of like that, the nostalgia of people going to the game shop kind of thing. So yeah, then everyone just invested all their money to the moon, and then for a few days it just kept on rising and rising and rising. But it didn't feel to me like there was any nefarious. It's not like the usual.
No
crypto scams, if that makes sense.
No, it's basically user generated. Basically, all the people, there's no one is behind it. It's basically it's the power of stupid people in a large group.
And then obviously, when everyone realized that they'd made 10 times their money, that people got greedy and started looking at it for their own interests, of course. I've got to read some comments because we're before my power cuts it. Because we've done about 55 minutes. So we've got, Epi says, evangelical mega churches aren't so much religious as political propaganda pulpits. Very well put.
Mm-hmm.
Anything to add to that?
No, that's very true.
This is
I mean, that's the thing about America, isn't it? That's how basically American politics work, and it's all work based on like prosperity gospel. Prosperity, have you heard of that? Prosperity gospel. Now it goes
this is new to me.
Against the whole teachings of Jesus. Jesus obviously took teaching about being generous to people, giving away your wealth, like that it's easier for a rich man to get into the kingdom of heaven than it is for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than a rich man to get into the kingdom of heaven. And they basically reversed it. They're like, you need to be a rich man in order to get to the kingdom of heaven. And if you're not rich, then clearly you're doing something wrong in this life. And they're basically they get you to invest, and they're sort of suggesting that this is like a seed, and then they're tying it into things about you need to plant the seed into the ground, all of these old proverbs about seeds growing, and getting people to just basically invest all their money into the, basically just give them the money in order that they can buy private jets and fly around. And then they're telling people this is going to help with their abundance creation and all of this really wafty, new agey language, which they've somehow connected into evangelical Christianity. And really, none of this, if you actually look at the Bible, should make any sense. But Americans, it's just Americans, they're stupid.
They love it. They love it. And then it's also, when I have seen them questioned on this stuff before, and they say, yes, God has blessed me. I'm a very blessed man. So for somebody that's kind of on a normal or below normal income, they're like, this man has been blessed by God. I should give him money because God's chosen him. And yeah. They're kind of sort of stuck in a perpetual money pit. Money pit, was that? Yeah.
And also, it's about the belief that at some point in the future you will be rich, even if you are not rich now. And it's not even in the kingdom of heaven. Well, you'll be rich in the kingdom of heaven, that's fine. But in the future. So if it's not working for you, you're doing something wrong. But there's always, again, it comes back to this, which is what Trump is preaching. It's this gospel of hope. Yeah. And that's the same thing that's in the GameStop experience. It's about hope that in the future, somehow this dead stock is going to rise. It's going to rise from the dead.
I think it's the most realistic of them all. Come on, GameStop.
It's true. Yes. No, it's yes. True. Yeah, come on, GameStop.
Come on, GameStop. We all need a bit of hope. We need a bit of hope.
If you haven't laughed at this, at least you've learned something, which is invest all your money into
GameStop. Right. But yeah, we've got the, what else we got? Yeah, there's, are we still talking politics or we moved on to religion? So yeah, it's funny that I was actually seeing this caravan, converted caravan bus or whatever I'm on just now. There's been no politics being allowed on this bus. It was like when we were talking about something, it's like no politics on the bus, please. So sorry. I think we maybe broke the no politics rule over the last hour. But
just a little bit.
Stephen Harlan says, at least he wouldn't have sweated on your pizza. Of course he didn't. The guy doesn't sweat because he had a gunfire and gave him PTSD, which made that he couldn't sweat. Even there was pictures of him sweating with, Joe McCann in the house. How you doing, Joe? Sheep follow sheep, baba to the abattoir, gab and blah blah from the armor of their avatar. Great lyrics, man. As the wise Gyro Babies once said from Planet Footnox. Stephen Helen says, Jeremy linked the names of the two bands, Gyro Babies and the UB from the 80s, both great bands. Yeah, I mean, I'd, like I said, I don't think he knew anything about it. That's why I don't think he'd said it before, because he just went, oh, like the Gyro. He spoke to me before, he went, like, Gyro, like, you know, yeah, yeah. A benefit payment. And I'm like, yeah. Oh, so it's like UB40. So it's not like he says that all the time. I don't believe for a second that he's been walking around giving his speeches saying, do you know this? It's almost, it always reminds
he's
me.
He's wearing his Gyro Babies t-shirt.
Yeah.
I should have given him a
t-shirt. Maybe that would stop all the hate. Just that would be enough. Mary, immigration has enriched the country, bringing their culture, music and diverse foods. Seen a really good thing today. It was a guy who said, what would happen if everyone did go back to their own country in 30 days? I can't remember who said it, but it was very interesting. I think if you just put that on TikTok, you'll find out, or on Facebook or whatever. But that was interesting, just talking about breaking it down. What would actually happen if everybody went to their country of origin and just went, fuck it, just let's go?
Yeah, everything would fall to bits because yeah. All the services and everything are staffed by immigrants. And also, yeah. Especially a lot of the lower level services, it really, really depend on an immigration because we've been living in a global society for the last 150 years. And so yeah. We can't move out of that. We need to progress forwards, which is what these people are trying to do. There's this sort of idea that there's this nostalgia of a different time. I've heard these people talking. I hate using that term, these people, because you're using the same language that they are. Because it's not them and us. We're all the same people. But I've heard people talking about the fact that we should bring back milkmen. Right, and like that's something that immigration has basically wiped away. If we brought back, you know, all of these things, everything would be better. You can't bring back milkmen. You know, like Tesco's has changed, multinational corporations have changed the way that we do business. It doesn't work that simply. But people believe that. That's, you know, that's what that, you know, take back control. That's what that means to some people.
Shout outs to Petra, who's just waved hello, Petra. Shouts to Stuart and everybody else who has joined in. But the lights are flickering, so I want to wrap up before we just go suddenly. So, but thank you so much, Becky. Absolute pleasure. What can, how can people find you? And have you got anything coming up? Is there anything you would like to plug?
I haven't got anything. I'm basically going to set something up, but I haven't got it set up yet, so there's no point. But you will find out if you follow me on TikTok, where I have nice short videos that are 1.5 minutes that I've written down and are very funny and very popular. And that's at Becky_Fury on TikTok.
Amazing stuff. And thank you to the patrons who support the show at patreon.com/youcallthatradio. And thank you for the caravan. Thank you to the caravan.
You call that radio?